Welcome to the Legacy Leaders Podcast. Are you doing the best for your client to help them create their legacy? Are you creating a plan that goes far beyond finances to help people ensure that it becomes the driving force behind all decisions? On this podcast, hosts Katie Beth Hand and Stan Miller will help you with growing your practice and your clients' peace of mind. Together, they bring the best and brightest minds to share with you how to help your clients develop their best legacy. And now, here are your hosts, Katie Beth and Stan.
Hi, and welcome to the Legacy Leaders Podcast. I'm your guest host, Carol Eddy, in Denver, Colorado, and I'm excited to introduce our guest today, Dylan Metzner. Dylan counsels individuals and families throughout the United States and internationally with their tax, estate, and private wealth planning needs, guiding them through the maze of laws and practical considerations, moving each client closer to achieving their goals and resolving outstanding issues. The true value in private wealth planning is twofold: mitigate taxes and manage legal and legacy concerns in complex family dynamics. Dylan focuses on designing plans that put the individual and family's values and goals first. He gets to know each of his clients, putting their priorities in order and carrying out plans that preserve wealth through the legal structures and innovative strategies. He helps them efficiently transfer property, reduce the risk of tax consequences, family conflict, and litigation. So with that introduction, welcome, Dylan.
Thank you, Carol. I'm so happy to be here, and thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. So can you start out by telling our listeners a little bit about your background and how you got into estate planning?
Sure. My background, I'm a Colorado native, and when I was in law school, actually, law school teaches students really to be lawyers and thinks that lawyers are litigators or business lawyers. They don't really talk about estate planning much. And I got into estate planning happenstancely. I graduated law school right during the Great Recession. My big corporate job was furloughed. So I hit my network and was really looking to any attorney I could to that would give me an opportunity. And I met an attorney. And he asked me, hey, what do you think about estate planning? And I lied through my teeth and I said, that is what I've always wanted to do. I've always wanted to be an estate planner. And I got a job being an estate planner. Lo and behold, I feel like I won the lottery there because I think this is one of the best practice areas in the legal profession to be in. And what I find is there are a lot smarter, younger attorneys than me that are in law school today saying they want to be an estate planner and they have the foresight of it. So I really got in here by happenstance. And I think one of the reasons I'm still here is why I love estate planning so much is you get to help. I married a litigator. I work with a number of litigators at the firm. Part of my practice does encompass trust and estate litigation. I don't have the brain. I like building things and helping clients achieve certain goals. And in law school and think in the job that was furloughed is going to be corporate and business law where there's a lot of contracts. If you think about an estate plan, it's very similar to a contract that you can control the terms of. And if you think of it in that sense, an estate plan is the most important contract you will ever sign because it's really making sure you are leaving your legacy the way you want it to, your life's work the way you want to, and also protecting yourself and structuring your plan so not only after death does it flow the way you want it to, but during life, if you're incapacitated, you've got the right people in place to take care of you and your loved ones as well. I didn't mean to get in this practice, but I was so lucky to get here. I love it. 15 years later, here I am.
And it's the same reason I really enjoy estate planning from the financial side is because it really is helping the whole family and helping them make decisions about how they want to pass things on, what kind of not just the finances, just the messaging, what's important to them. Do they want stories passed down? And it gives you the time to do that with both the legal side and the family side, like you said. So yeah, I definitely understand that. So what are some of the common issues you help clients with in your practice?
I think some of the most common issues that come into play are navigating the family dynamic. A lot of people that come to me have some sort of complexity, whether that complexity is there's going to be an estate tax issue, whether that complexity is You have minor children that aren't legally able to inherit, or more and more what you're seeing is you've got children that you love very much and that they get along okay, but they butt heads there, and they and or you have second marriages and stepchildren. What is keeping the glue that's keeping those relationships around is really mom and dad, matriarch and patriarch. And a lot of clients that come to me after seeing friends or family members who maybe didn't have a great estate plan in place or had an estate plan in place that put these children, siblings in charge of everything. Once mom and dad are either incapacitated or deceased, that glue starts to erode, and that's when fights happen. So really what the clients are coming to me to, Dylan, how can I help create a plan not only that passes my legacy the way I want to, but minimizes the risk of family dysfunction? And so that's really where I try to navigate things. And unfortunately, too, one of the things I'm seeing more and more is in the litigation side of estate planning. You always think of, oh, after mom and dad are deceased, maybe some their beneficiaries fight over the inheritance there. A lot of times what I'm seeing is the kids start fighting while mom and dad are alive, and they're in their 10 years before they're maybe diminished capacity or things like that. And mom and dad are coming to me saying, Dylan, my kids are fighting. How can you help me with this? Mm-hmm. And so that's really where I try to help come in and think of ways of, hey, how can we get back to what's important? And the relationships are important, and the money, not so much. It's really, and that's what I love what you say about legacy and the legacy leaders. Estate planning is so much more than passing financial wealth down, which you do a great job of managing and helping, but you also realize there's more wealth. There's a human capital. There's a value. And really that's where what I enjoy helping clients with and passing that along and trying to get the family discord to a minimum. You may not be able to, if you have children that butt heads, you may not be able to have them turn into the Brady Bunch. Even the Brady Bunch has some butt there. But we can at least set expectations and set boundaries and really have the family get along in harmony and have these discussions, these open discussions that are tough, but they don't have to be relationship ending.
Yeah. And I think one of the things we often recommend is either doing a letter or a video right after they meet with the estate lawyer and get all that stuff done, is explain why they did what they did, because it still can cause a lot of conflict. And if they just have a letter saying what their intention was, often that will mitigate some of the conflict between siblings or resentments against the parents, not understanding why they did what they did. And maybe they had a really good reason, they just didn't see it. So I can definitely relate to that.
I agree 100%, Carol.
Yeah. So what do you think the biggest challenge you think your clients are facing today in this world?
There's a lot of uncertainty in the tax world. And one of the things I'm saying is clients often will come to me and say, hey, I want an estate plan that minimizes taxes and that minimizes estate taxes. Fortunately, for the vast majority, 99%, that there may not, estate taxes may not be an issue. If the law is going to may change and it may go down. I tell people, if you're single and your net worth is under 7 million, you don't need to worry about estate taxes. If you're married and the combined net worth is under 14 million, you're not going to have to worry about estate taxes. And so clients feel good about that. But where we do have issues that clients are very surprised about is a lot of the wealth now used to be most of the wealth was in real estate. A lot of most wealth is still in real estate, but retirement accounts are now a big wealth holder. And those do have now real severe income tax consequences.
Yeah.
May not be an estate tax, but now all of a sudden, if you have $1 million retirement account and you're thinking, okay, I've got $1 million that retirement account. When the hands of the children or the grandchildren that's going to be taxed to them at ordinary income levels. So that $1 million is in their hands is going to be something less than that. And so that's an issue that I'm seeing with almost all of my core estate plans. We've got retirement accounts in play that we need to look at. And one common misconception, I'm not sure it's a misconception as much as it is just an oversight or not thinking through, is clients that are charitably minded that are in their estate plan are leaving any amount to charity, $5,000, $100,000, whatever it is. If you have a retirement account, that's a vehicle you first should use to leave to charity, because the charity doesn't have to pay income taxes on it. And if you leave, if you want to leave $5,000 to an individual, a child, or $5,000 to a charity, leave $5,000 bank account to a child and leave $5,000 IRA to a charity. And so that's one thing that I see with almost every one of my clients when we're doing an estate plan is talking about the fund. And Carol,
well, we used to, go ahead.
One other point, and this kind of got to my, this approached my mind there, is with that, and these are clients that will come to me with estate plans in place, clients will have a will and think, okay, or will or irrevocable trust and think, okay, everything's going to, I've got an estate plan, I'm all taken care of. But they don't account for assets that are held joint, assets that have beneficiary designation. It doesn't matter what your will or trust says you want to have happen. If jointly held assets or assets with beneficiary designations, those are going to pass outside of the will or trust. So working with advisors such as yourself and really making sure your CPA, your attorney, and your financial advisor are all talking together is really important, because I've seen the estate plans fail because the attorney just failed to talk about the importance of changing title or changing beneficiary designations.
Yeah. And the other thing, back to the IRA piece, it used to be you could spread the distribution of that IRA indefinitely amongst the children. And now that retirement account of $1 million, if you've only got two people inheriting, you've got $500,000 that has to be distributed within 10 years. And that can really have huge tax, because that bumps them into much higher tax brackets, and then it gets taken away in tax versus being able to utilize that. So like you said, if you can strategically do the IRA for other things like charity, then your kids aren't going to worry about the tax consequences of what should be a good thing. But they're like, wow, they just ate up a bunch of that.
Oh, absolutely. More and more of my clients with their financial advisors are running different scenarios. Out of us attorneys, I have an Excel spreadsheet. I can't run financial scenarios, but sometimes Roth conversions do make sense. And it really is talking with the team about that. But that is the biggest trap that people don't think about. They think about estate tax as well, the retirement account tax.
Well, baby boomers have some of the biggest accounts. So. Yeah. That's like you said, that's becoming a really big issue in this time right now. So yeah, very, very important stuff. Can you tell us a story about things that might have gone wrong for a client that came to you?
Yeah. I'm going to use it in the context of a client's estate that came to me where I didn't draft the documents. And I think this is important. I'll give you two different stories. One of underdrafting of going, and I think this client maybe used a drafting software or perhaps an attorney that really didn't take the time to talk about different issues. And the other is overdraft. The idea is the importance of really taking the time to see a drafting attorney that knows how these plans are going to be administered. One item we had is a client who passed. And this client's estate consisted of a house, a bank account, and a couple retirement accounts. This was about probably with everything was about a $3 million estate. And this client's the estate was it being administered through a revocable trust or a living trust. And I think in Colorado's in revocable trusts, a lot of people say you need a revocable trust to avoid probate. And if you're in certain states where probate is a nightmare, New York, California. You want to avoid probate at all costs because it's great for the probate attorneys, but it's expensive and time consuming. In Colorado, which is uniform probate code state, probate's not that the end of the world, but there's still benefits to avoiding. So I am a big fan of revocable trust, but here I think was in a state that probably didn't need a revocable trust. The client, the person that it was a woman and she had two children and she wanted to leave everything to her children in equal shares. But what ended up happening for this $3 million estate is what the revocable trust said. It was about a 80-page document. And oh, by the way, it wasn't fully funded. They forgot to put
the, which happens all the time.
They forgot to put the house in the trust. So we had to open up probate anyways to get the house into the trust. Another step that had been done. So if you're going to have a revocable trust, make sure it's funded. But what this trust said is, okay, and the retirement account went into the trust. But what the trust said is, okay, upon liquidate everything. Whoops, not hard to say. But liquidate everything, and then everything goes into testamentary trusts for my two children. And they're both going to be the trustee of those trusts. And I get the concept of, hey, there may be creditor protection, or there may be spousal protection, or maybe estate tax protection. But again, at $1.5 million for each of these trusts, it wasn't the case there. There wasn't estate tax protection. And in order for the accounts, it took about $20,000. The bottom line is it took about $20,000 in legal fees for the attorneys to coordinate with the bank and specifically with the retirement account administrator to have these accounts flow into first the revocable trust, then into the testamentary trust. And though the retirement account administrators issued checks directly, so a much simpler way of doing this, and the kids ended up cratering the trust because they didn't want to file a separate tax return for this. So a much simpler way of doing this may have been having a simple will that says, look, everything to my kids 50-50. But then the mother could have worked with their advisor and had their bank account or their investment account pay on death beneficiaries to the kids. Real easy to get there. The retirement accounts, name the kids as beneficiaries, much easier to administer. And then the house, you can do beneficiaries. So it really is, that was an example of overcomp.
So yeah.
I'm not going to get an example of the undercomplicating, but that's one thing of the value. People often will avoid going to an attorney because they're afraid things are going to be overcomplicated. Go to an attorney.
Cost too much.
Yes, or cost too much. Go to I have a story about attorneys, planning attorneys costing too much. But make sure going to an attorney that specializes in estate planning. If you have cancer, you're not going to a back doctor or your general practitioner. They're going to send you to a specialist. And it's really going to an attorney who specializes in estate planning. They know and asking them, is this overcomplicated? If I may, Carol, I want to address an estate plan costs too much because for me, my fee structure for estate plans, it starts at $4,500. And so this is where my value at. There should be some complexity. But what I tell clients of, okay, this $4,500, and when I'm talking to you about how do Sally and Bob get along, or how do the three kids get along? Because if we have these hard conversations now, address them in the plan, and you recommend, which I think is a great idea of having a legacy letter, having a legacy video, talking to your kids, maybe having a family meeting with the attorney of saying, setting the expectations of here where things go is I don't see a lot of estates dissipating towards taxes. I see the estates dissipating towards the litigation. And when you have beneficiaries fighting with each other, you have at least, let's say we have two beneficiaries. You have at least three attorneys. You have the attorney representing beneficiary number one who's fighting. You have attorney representing beneficiary number two who's fighting. And you have attorney representing whoever's administering the estate. And in active litigation, if they, on a good month, in active litigation, each party is paying their attorney $10,000 a month. That's $30,000 right there. Or yeah. The client says, hey, we're going to save a few bucks and just do a simple will and my kids will be able to figure it out. If there's discord in the family, money's, and this is where it's, I'll bring in estate litigation because from a business standpoint, it's great, but it's awful for the family. The only ones who win in estate litigation are the attorneys. And that's where I try to help my clients see any potential strife and let's address it head on now.
Right. And it's money well spent. So for example, if you put things in a trust that it's much harder to fight anyway.
Exactly.
Because trusts are pretty cut and dry versus if you go to probate, they might be able to argue more. There's all these things. If you're talking to them, it's money well spent because they can avoid a lot of these potential highly expensive battles. You know, if they have anybody that they think, and there are lots of families out there where the kids don't get along or two of the five. There's always somebody who's clashing, who's not going to be happy. And
it only takes one.
Right. It only takes one member to start litigating. So I think it's super valuable for anybody that, like you said, if there's really small estates and tell them, you could probably do a one on your own and be fine. Yeah, you just make sure you have your wills and powers of attorney and medical power of attorney in place. And then, do, like you said, transfer on death. Because if you have the smaller bank accounts, that's pretty simple to do. It avoids everything. Yeah. But if you have potential conflict, it's worth your weight in gold to have it protected so that you'll minimize your own legacy of having conflict.
Yeah. And you will. And again, I think the best way to minimize it is even better than an airtight estate plan. Is having the tough discussions with family. And some clients don't want to have it. And I understand that's okay too. But if you're willing to have those tough discussions, it's a lot of the fights come with unrealized expectations or missed expectations of there's no way dad wanted this. When yes, he did, but he just didn't convey that to the child.
Well, when you have those conversations with the estate attorney and the financial person like me, it makes the transition so much simpler because I can help them get through all that. You and I both know all the paperwork hurdles, what to do when. And the reality is they are still grieving to their parents and you don't want all that conflict or stress of just handling the estate. So if we have those family meetings and they know who I am or know who you are, the transition to the next generation is so much simpler for them and they can just spend the time, I hate to say it, but grieving. They have time to grieve versus, oh God, I've got to work on this state.
And until you are in it, you don't understand the grieving process. And we had to delay this podcast. I unfortunately lost my mother very unexpectedly back in August. And I've been doing estate planning for 14 years. I always thought I understand what this is like. I understand what my clients are going through, the grief process. You don't know till you're in it. And it really, to the extent you have that team in place, financial team, the attorneys in place who know each other, know what you want, who've worked on the documents, who've seen the documents, it makes it so much easier when the grieving family can say, hey, Carol, can you help with this? And time again, Carol, and I'm sure you see it too, you and the attorney or me and you work together. It's okay. You need to sign here. You need to sign here. You focus on your grief and it gets done.
Whereas, right. And you don't need to talk to me for 2 months.
Nope.
Go do what you need to do and I'll let you know when we need to do the next step.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Can you tell us a story of where things went really well and your client has just had it be, as a result of meeting with you, had a much easier transition?
Yeah. I think it's one of those we teed up to having the team in place. And this is one where we have a financial advisor, myself and the CPA, the client brought us all in, had us sitting together with in talking about different estate planning ideas, different thoughts with it. Do we want to do trust? Do we want to not do trusts? Things like that. And by having that team in place, it's exactly what we talk about. the client. Now she was an older lady, but when she died, it happened very fast. It was a shock, and in this case, the family was all gets along great. She decided to name one of her children from the West Coast as personal representative. They had to come out here to Colorado to just get things started. But then they went back home, back to California, being a doctor. This is an emergency room doctor. Usually I will say, oh, you got a doctor? They're going to be too busy to do this. But here I understood with her that, and the client understood, because she also introduced us to the child, the whole team to the child. So when, after the funeral, the advisors had a meeting with a personal representative and said, okay, here's what everything's going to look like. We can now sign both legal documents, can't sign via DocuSign yet. So there are some things I had to get wet signatures for. We're so arcane, not like you guys, but everything else really DocuSign. And so it was really the client, the personal representative, went back to California, was doing their medical practice at the emergency room. And we worked together, and within the estates, you can't close in Colorado technically till after 6 months. Everything was done. We had the creditor period. Everything was done in 4 months. And this was a much more complicated estate too. We had a house that needed to be sold. We had a number of retirement accounts, investment accounts, and bank accounts. But the other thing that this client did was consolidate. So really it was wait for the creditor period, 4 month period. After the creditor period passed, distributions were made, and then we just sat for 2 more months because we couldn't file a closing affidavit until then. And that's, I think, the key to that is getting all the players together, the advisors together, to work together, and everything, you know where everything is. On the other side of the spectrum of that, Carol, I've had an estate that was 3 years to close, and this, and there were 300 baker's boxes we had to go through. The client was of the Depression era, so kept everything very close to the vest. Now, we did find $250,000 of cash stashed in books here or there, but it was like a puzzle. And the family, we were finding something new every day. And the family would find a stock record from the 1990s that looked like it was worth $10,000 at the time. And we went through about 10 different rabbit holes to see what happened to that stock. And it's just, it really, if you're not consolidated and you don't tell anywhere where things are, it's piecing it all together after that. And it takes a long time and a lot of heartache, a lot of expense. And that's the other end of the spectrum when an estate went wrong.
Yeah, I definitely can appreciate that. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you'd like your listeners to know?
I think another thing that I'd like listeners to know is really making it is just open communication, not just with the children or the family or the beneficiaries of setting expectation, but also the people you are naming to make decisions on your behalf. So if you're if you have minor children, there's a number of things you need to do. You've got who's going to be the guardian for these children. And it's really talking to those people. You'd be surprised how many people say, oh, I want so-and-so to be a guardian. And if they can, I want so-and-so. Have you asked them? No. You need to ask them to. Now, if you don't have minor children, and even if you do, the other things you need to think about is who's going to make financial decisions on your behalf if you're unable to. Who's going to make medical decisions on your behalf if you're on it? And again, it's talking to those people first, make sure they're able to do it. A lot of times I'll have clients come up and say, oh, Carol's managing my money now. She'd be the perfect one to be making these financial decisions. She's not able to under her rules. So
a conflict of interest.
Conflicts of interest. So what it is finding someone who can work with Carol to do that, who can be the CEO and just let Carol continue that. But Carol needs to report to someone. So that's the one thing is the takeaway for me today is open communication. is always best. Setting expectations and making sure the people you want to make these decisions understand that you're asking them to do it and are willing to do it. I have had a couple situations where the client has either become incapacitated and the people they name just say, we can't do it. And then you're starting without an estate plan.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely worthwhile. Good, great advice.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Dylan, for your wise words and your, like I said, great advice throughout. And for all of our listeners, this is the Legacy Leaders Podcast with Carol Eddy. And our guest today was Dylan Metzner. For more information about Dylan and the work that he does, please visit joneskeller.com. And Dylan, thanks again.
Thank you again. It was a lot of fun.
All right. Take care.
You've been listening to the Legacy Leaders Podcast with Katie Beth Hand and Stan Miller. For more information on them and the show, please visit pinnaclelegacylaw.com. If you like what you've learned today, do share the program with your friends and subscribe wherever podcasts are found.